We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Today's episode is brought to you by the folks over at SeatGeek, the best and easiest to use ticket platform out there. They take the confusion out of buying tickets using a 0 to 10 scoring system and a green is good, red is bad color rating system so you and your loved ones get the best deal possible. So whether it's going to see our beloved Red Legs at Great American Ballpark, the Bengals over at Paycor, FC Cincinnati, one of the area college teams, or pretty much anything in between, use promo code RIVERFRONT at checkout and receive $20 off your first order. Click the link in the show notes to download the app and get started. That's RIVERFRONT, one word, for $20 off.
What is up, everybody? This is the Bengals Show presented by the Riverfront. I am your host, Joe Farsing. Next to me is my good friend and yours, Greg Neiman. Greg, what's going on, buddy?
Living the dream.
Fantastic. Are you ready for the postseason or the offseason to start?
I enjoy the offseason, so we get to start looking at the draft and some free agency and things like that. So I'd rather be in the playoffs, but it's all right.
Yeah, can we just fast forward through the next month and a half to get the playoffs and everything, especially since Bengals aren't in it. I don't really care. We'll get into the playoffs here in a little bit once we get past Bengals news and notes, but let's get past the Pro Bowl. Let's get past the Super Bowl so we can get to free agency, draft coverage, and get into the meat of making the Bengals 2024 Bengals have a better season ending than the 2023 Bengals, and that's what's most important. So quickly, if you guys are watching this on YouTube... Yeah, if you guys are watching on YouTube, hit subscribe, hit like, all that fun crap. If you're listening on the podcast feeds on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc., leave us a review. 5 stars would be fantastic. Otherwise, shut your mouth. We don't need your negativity around here. Check out our site, riverfrontcincy.com. All of the college basketball by the UC reporter, Xavier, NKU, Miami as well. Check out our shop. Constantly trying to update, bring cool new t-shirt designs and everything, which we'll try next year. We'll try to put them out well before Christmas so that you can actually purchase them and get them as a gift, as opposed to my brilliant idea, putting them out like the week before. So nothing would, you wouldn't be able to get them received in time. So.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, you were way ahead of next Christmas.
That's how I'm rush.
Yeah.
Real quickly, we'll just go into a quick game review of last Sunday's game. Bengals dog walked the Browns 31-14. There's not really much to take away. I mean, it was clear the Bengals were playing regulars against backups until the end when Jeff Driscoll burned Dax Hill for 2 touchdown passes. That's kind of upsetting and kind of just on par with how the season has gone, but there's not a lot to really go into. A couple guys hit milestones. Joe Mixon hit 1,000 yards rushing yards. Whoop-de-doo. For whatever reason, still didn't decide to use Chase Brown more. Tyler Boyd hit exactly 6,000 career yards on 513 catches for his Bengals career, which pretty cool for Cincinnati, obviously 513 area code. That's probably the last catch of Tyler Boyd's Cincinnati Bengals career and hitting exactly 6,000 game. I think it's the last Bengals game for both of them. What do you think?
I agree, but for some reason, I'm a little nervous about Mixon. I don't know. The Bengals seem attached to him, so he scares me a little bit. But I do think most likely the last game for both.
Yeah, Boyd, I just don't see any chance they're going to bring him back. I don't know what the future holds for him. He had a really down year. A lot of just key drops. He had a couple drops, just in key moments. He had a wide open catch that he dropped on Sunday. And for someone who's in their eighth season, that's known for their, for their good hands. I mean, he's not a speed receiver. He's not doesn't have the physical size as a T. Higgins. He's not going to go over top of you. He's not going to run past you. If you don't have hands, what do you have? I don't know. Well, who knows how much just the situation of being in the last year of his contract laid on his head. I mean, these guys, as much as they want to say it doesn't, they don't think about it, they think about it. So, after the season ended, Bengals end up with the 18th pick in the draft, which is fantastic. They have the worst draft pick of any team that didn't make the playoffs. Thanks to their strength of schedule, because they played the toughest schedule in the NFL, so their 9-8 is more impressive, less impressive. I don't know which way you want to put it to any other like team. I mean, they've got the same record as the Buccaneers, who won their division. So, again, what do you do? You
play the team. Don't love it. Schedule. I mean, I think they should start rewarding the team with the hardest. It's almost like they're. I understand their thought process, but I hate the way it worked out for the Bengals.
Yeah, it's almost like we get a 9-8 team is more, or 9-8 win loss record versus a ridiculous gauntlet of a schedule is more impressive than a 9-8 team, in any of the other divisions, because you're not playing as good of teams, but you should be rewarded by. I mean, again, this isn't college sports where you pick your schedule. You play the rotating schedule and stuff like that, but I don't know. That seems kind of a kick in the balls. Hey, you guys just missed out, and you get the last priority on draft picks. But regardless, you're only talking a couple pick difference. You just hope that none of those picks go to guys the Bengals are aiming for. At this point, it's too early to even start thinking about that. So that being said, we do have the schedule set, at least for the teams and where they're going to be played. Based on their last place schedule, they're going to be playing New England, Tennessee, and Carolina, which for them gives them a home slate of obviously the Baltimore, Cleveland, Pittsburgh teams from the Central. Wow, that's a long time ago.
Throwback.
Wow, holy smokes. we'll try that. AFC North, home game against Denver Broncos, Las Vegas Raiders, Philadelphia Eagles, Washington Commanders, New England Patriots, and then road games, obviously, versus the three division teams at Dallas, Kansas City. Again, Bengals at Kansas City, that's every single year. That'll be 4 years in a row they'll play in Arrowhead. They do get a nice trip to Los Angeles to play the Chargers. They're in New York for the Giants, then at Carolina, at Tennessee. Any game would. Of the home slate, any of those that, obviously we don't know day times, prime time, anything like that, but Philadelphia Eagles at Paycor, I think, seems like that'll probably be the most fun and probably the one that they're going to most likely in prime time, that they'll have Ring of Honor, whiteout game like that. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think the Philly game jumps out right off the rip as one that Cincinnati will do a good job. We'll take that one real seriously, and that'll be a crazy atmosphere for sure.
Yeah. The schedule looks a lot more forgiving than this past 2023 season. Road game at Dallas. Obviously, that's going to be a tough game. They lost there just a couple years ago. Again, at Kansas City. I don't know what Kansas City is going to look like next year, but they're still going to have Mahomes. They still have Andy Reid. They're going to be at least a solid team. Then they'll win the division because NFC West or wow, I am struggling. AFC West is just flat out ass. So,
right. Yeah, I'm excited to see the Bengals take down Kansas City next year. I'm looking forward to that one. I feel like the Bengals finally have a clear upper hand on that game. I'm excited to see that one.
Yeah, and again, I mean, it was pretty much just a one-position game, even with Jake Browning at quarterback this last year. And for whatever reason, the Bengals, no matter how who's at quarterback, how awful the defense is playing, they keep Kansas City close enough. I mean, Kansas City, it's now 3-2 in, you know, in the past couple years, head-to-head meetings, and they're all one-possession games. So it's Bengals know what Andy Reid's going to do, and Andy Reid knows what the Bengals are going to do, but they're fun matchups, so... briefly, we'll take a look at AFC North final standings. Ravens lost a fake game to the Steelers. Steelers end up getting the final wild card spot. Yay. Okay, great. Ravens 13-4. Browns 11-6 after getting plastered. Their B team getting plastered. Bengals obviously bringing up the rear at 9-8. Quick view of the AFC playoffs. Ravens do get the number one bye. Texans host Browns Saturday at 4:30, the 4-5 game. Saturday evening, Chiefs host the Dolphins. It's going to be really, really, really cold in Kansas City. I think the highs or the game time temperature is going to be somewhere in the mid-teens.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun. Dolphins, because they lost, they had a chance to host. So they're playing, what, 85-degree weather in Miami in January. Instead, they lose and get to play in frigid... probably one of the 10, you know, probably one of the probably coldest game that any Miami team's ever had to face before. So, final AFC matchup, Bills hosting the Steelers Sunday at 1:00. What game do you think is going to be the best game?
I think it's the Texans and the Browns. I think that game's going to be, I think it's super interesting, super intriguing. CJ Stroud, the youngster, versus the old Wiley veteran and Joe Flacco. I don't see the Bills-Steelers game being much of a game, and I think they ruled Watt out for that game, so the Steelers, I think, are in real trouble there. I think they were in trouble even if Watt played, but now that he's out, I don't like that one. So, yeah, I think Cleveland and Houston turns out to be a pretty solid matchup. That Kansas City game, I've heard lower temperatures than that in the tens and maybe lower single digits. So it's supposed to be very cold there. So I think that'll have an effect on the game, and I think Tyreek Hill's dealing with a couple injuries. So to me, the one game I want to see is Houston and Cleveland.
Yeah, I think that's set up to be the best matchup. I still – Flacco 7, I don't want to say storybook because he's only been there for 5 games, but I think it's his – story is going to end there for all the touchdown passes, for all the yards that he's been throwing in, and he's thrown 3 touchdowns a game, thrown for 300 somebody yards a game. He's still throwing a ton of interceptions, and I just think pass rush, I think Will Anderson's going to get to him. We saw how good Texans pass rush is when they were here in Cincinnati. They don't have one guy. Like, that pass rush comes from interior, it comes from guys on the edge. I think it's going to force Flacco into making a couple killer interceptions that's just going to knock them off. Stroud being able to play his first game at in the dome at Energy Stadium instead of having to go on the road is actually going to help them. So that's, I don't know, is that considered an upset? I mean, I know it's a 4-5 game. The Browns have the better record and they had the better season.
The Browns in Vegas are actually the favorite right now. Last time I checked, they were a favorite by almost 3. So
okay.
I guess Houston would technically count as an upset, but when you're playing at home, it's hard to see that as an upset.
Right, and that's, you know, I mean, it's a one-game difference between the two teams, and they're still playing with the backup quarterback. Joe Flacco is the guy who was, what, 3-13 or whatever his record was between the last 2 years at Denver and New York Jets. He's got a better surrounding cast there, but This is a guy who wasn't a great quarterback when they made the Super Bowl over a decade ago. All of a sudden, he's, you know... He's had a handful of prodigious output games, but he's still going to make a killer turnover. He's still a statue out there. If you knock him off a spot and move, he's not going to be able to move. You're going to get to him, or he's going to throw some balls up for grabs.
I will say, though, for you say storybook, for a 5-game stretch, I mean, this has got to be the best storybook 5-game stretch for a guy out of nowhere. I mean, it's mind-blowing, really. I mean, I'm sure Cleveland loves him, but it is mind-blowing what's gone on there.
It's just crazy because they went through so many other starting quarterbacks. I mean, obviously, Deshaun Watson got hurt. Oh, darn. PJ Walker was ineffective. Dorian Thompson-Robinson was ineffective. And then they end up having to bring in Jeff Driscoll off the street to be a backup. And he's the one that started and played against the Bengals on Sunday. Five different quarterbacks to start for a team that went to the playoffs. Again, the last one doesn't really count, but it's just playing out the string game on the last week with nothing to play for. But I don't know. I still don't. If Flacco were this good, he'd have had a job, or he'd have played better, you know, on other teams. I think, I mean, guys can get on heaters. I mean, Andy Dalton played absolutely lights out for most of 2015 and reverted to Andy Dalton after that. But I just think it's going to come tumbling down. And it's not against him. I mean, he was sitting on his couch. So kudos for him. I think he's going to regress to the mean. But I think that's the best chance of being an actual good game on the schedule. So real quick, we'll look at the NFC bracket. 49ers, again, they clinched number one seed a couple weeks ago. They had the bye week. Then we have Bucks host number four game. Bucks host the Eagles Monday at 8:15. I hate the idea of Monday night football games. I hate the idea of teams having to play on short weeks in the playoffs, because whoever wins that, they're going to have to play on a short week. And that's it's such a detriment. They're going to have to probably end up playing the 49ers, and I think that's kind of bullshit. But
I completely agree with you.
Yeah, it's all TV ratings. Play the next week on a Monday night then, or whatever. Number three, Lions host the Rams Sunday at 8:15, the Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford Bowl. And then Cowboys host Packers Sunday at 4:30. What game do you think is the best?
I mean, to be honest, this NFC slate, I love all the games. I'm excited to watch all of them. If I had to pick one, you know, if they said you only get one and you can't watch anything else, I'm going Lions-Rams, Stafford going back home. I just think there's so much to that game that I just can't imagine being a Detroit fan. You get nothing good for 100 years, and now all of a sudden the guy that you used to root for 15 of them is going to come back and ruin the day. I mean, it's just the storyline in that game is fantastic. But Bucks-Eagles, I think, should be a good game. I mean, we don't really know what we're getting from the Eagles. And then Cowboys-Packers, I think the I like the Packers' young offense. I don't think they're going to be able to do enough in this game against the Cowboys, but all three games, I think, have some intriguing storylines, but Lions-Rams would kind of sticks out as the cream of the crop for those three.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. I do think that I think the Packers have a chance to upset the Cowboys. The Cowboys are just so prone to laying eggs. I like Jordan Love a lot. I think he's got so much talent. Just the sheer luck that Green Bay has had over 30 years to just keep lucking into. I'm lucking in. I mean, I don't know. We're talking several front office regimes, so it's not as if it's the same guys that got Brett Favre, that got Aaron Rodgers, that got Jordan Love, but just being able to have that kind of continuity. I mean, the Bengals have had ridiculous continuity at quarterback outside of the 90s, and they can't even in their wildest dreams say 30 years for three quarterbacks. So, but yeah, and Lions.
That Packers receiving core is young and talented. I mean, we had, I can't remember who asked us the question in the offseason going back about Dontayvion Wicks, the one lone draftable prospect from the University of Virginia. And he looks good for the Packers. So him, Jaden Reed, Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, they have their young receiving core is frightening. I mean, they for years to come with Jordan Love moving up, I love what the Packers have going on offensively.
And what an odd concept. They drafted two tight ends as well. And those two are contributing as well. So, but yeah, that was Nate Dotson and Chad Dotson are both alums of University of Virginia. So I kind of had to throw that carrot in. They're like, hey, look, they've got somebody that's a somebody from Virginia that's draftable. So, and yeah, he's
definitely looked good.
He's definitely got a future. So we'll give him that. So, but yeah, like I said, I think Green Bay is going to pull off the upset. Just so many years of Dallas crap in the bed since they won their Super Bowls, and I'm here for it. I think it's, I, I love to see it. I love seeing the meltdown. So
it's amazing to me that you think Dallas is going to crumble in the playoffs. They never crumble in the playoffs. Dallas is so steady when it comes to playoffs.
They are they're the anti New England Patriots. Patriots every year they falter, they fall on their face. You know, always, you know, this is going to be their year, and they end up just shitting the bed. And yeah, no, we're completely kidding there. So outside of that, you know, it should be a fun weekend. I don't know. I'm not going to watch all six games. I don't have the time to watch all six games, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I just want to see. I want to see everyone just freezing their ass off. I want to see Patrick Mahomes complaining about the cold and whining. I want to see him bundled up. He's become, and only partially due to himself, he's become my most loathed player in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I'm not going to go into it. I promise I'm going to stay, you know, light on this, but it's not all his fault. I mean, the people around him make it way worse. He doesn't help himself at times, but the people around him, they're dragging him down.
Yeah, they're kind of a bunch of spoiled brats. So we get to the meat of the show here and talking about Bengals roster. What's going to happen, where they're going, what we think they're going to do from in terms of free agency, who's staying, who's going. So real quickly here, we'll go over Bengals did sign a bunch of guys to futures contracts. These are guys that were on their practice squad, or you can sign someone from your practice squad or any other team's practice squad. When the season's over, all of those guys are up for grabs. Bengals just retain their own. So any guy of note there of the 10 that are listed?
Nothing too crazy jumps out to me. Dominic Davis, maybe.
I like Jackson Kirkland as undrafted free agent. He got hurt, so he was on the injured list. I think he's got a future as a reserve offensive lineman. Dominic Davis, he absolutely dominated in preseason. They called him up for one game. I was hoping that they'd call him back up for Sunday's game just to give him some run at D tackle, because again, Bengals need to figure out some depth there, or starter for that matter, since DJ Reader isn't signed. So outside of that, just kind of regular business. Into the meat. Here are the Bengals' key free agents. I didn't list all of them because there are so many guys that that well down the two or three deep. So DJ Reader, Tyler Boyd, Chidobe Awuzie, Jonah Williams, T. Higgins, Irv Smith, Drew Sample, Trenton Irwin, and then Tanner Hudson and Jake Browning are both exclusive rights free agents, meaning that Bengals can offer a contract without having to have any other team. So the only way these guys hit the free agency is if the Bengals decline offering a contract. We'll just go one by one. Do you think they bring DJ Reader back?
I would lean no. I mean, something with the money would have to be perfect with him coming off injury. So I'm going to say no.
I think he's going to be a late signing. I think team's going to wait until training camp. I don't know what his – I haven't seen anything about what his actual timeline is coming back from his injury. I think he's going to hold off and then try to have some kind of a showcase. It would probably make sense for him to wait until closer to the season starts, till after all the cuts and everything. He sees where his best chance to get playing time is. I think the Bengals do bring him back. I have no idea where he's going to be. I have no idea. I mean, he's not young. I mean, he's getting up in he's going to be 30. Injury obviously happened at the very worst time. This is his last chance of getting a good payday. So I can see him signing a 1-year kind of prove it deal and then trying to re-enter the market a year older. But I do think he's back with the Bengals next year. He means so much to this organization. He was the first big signing when Zach Taylor took over, and kind of just a symbolic signing more than anything else. So
yeah, I think if he's back, it'll be that 1-year prove it deal. I mean, that's for sure.
Yeah. Tyler Boyd.
No chance. This one, I 100% know.
Yeah, I mean, they need to get younger. They need to get more explosive on offense. He's been one of the top 10 receivers in Bengals history, and the Bengals had a lot of good receivers through their history, and he's one of them. Again, 8 years, 513 catches, 6,000 yards. The defining moment for him, 2019 game against Miami. It was the blow for Burrow Bowl, but with them in Miami, everyone wanted the Bengals to lose. It was that amazing game where the Bengals came back from almost like 21 points down or something like that in the last, and he hurt himself on a play, drags himself up limping. Tyler Eifert kind of helps him up just so he can line up quickly so that Dalton can run up and spike the ball. A game that meant nothing. I mean, it's, again, three quarters of the fan base wanted them to lose so that they could, you know, just secure the number one overall pick. And he's out there playing through an injury, just dragging himself up so that just so the Bengals could clock a ball in a game against another awful team with the Dolphins. So absolute warrior. One of the guys that, you know, they talked about someone having the dog in them. That's the guy, but it, tenure just kind of went out with a whimper.
Yep. Totally agree. Well put.
Chidobe Awuzie. I don't know. It's clear he wasn't completely healthy. Bengals do have depth issues at cornerback, so I can see it a possibility of them bringing him back. He's not going to be a starter for the Bengals, so if someone offers him a starter job, he's gone. That's kind of my thought. Where are you on Cheeto?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's similar to DJ Reader. It's got to be the right – I think it all comes down to money. It's got to come down to the right dollar figure. The Bengals are not going to go above and beyond to make this signing. So I think it all just comes down to money and what's his market like coming off of that. Because I still almost consider him coming off of the injury.
Yeah, and he had back injuries as well this season. And it's clear. I mean, this is a guy who was playing at such a high level in 2021 and the first half of 2022. I mean, he was Pro Bowl level. I mean, he was borderline All-Pro level. Just that absolute shutdown corner. And I'm not saying he can't get back to that level, but he was clearly nowhere near where he needed to be. I mean, toward, even in the early part of the season, he started a timeshare with second-round pick DJ Turner. So love him to be able to come back at 100%, but yeah, he's not a starter for this team, I don't think, going into 2024 if he does come back.
Yeah, agreed.
Right tackle Jonah Williams.
This one's tough. I mean, I kind of hope he's back at right tackle. Does he want to continue to be a right tackle? I think there's a lot that plays into this that is all kind of in Jonah Williams. The ball's kind of in his court of what does he want to do? Is he trying to jump back to the left side? You know, I don't know. He's going to get a good contract. I can tell you that somewhere. But I'd like to see him back at right tackle for the Bengals. I just don't know that I see it playing out that way.
This is kind of a hard one for me because he was solid. He wasn't great, but I mean, he was better than average. In terms of performance, I would almost let him walk unless he tested free agency, wasn't getting anything, you know, near what he was looking and came back, I don't say discounted, but at a good price. I think they need someone who has the talent and ability to be an actual top tackle. Orlando Brown is fine. He's a solid starter on left side. He's making good money, but he's not paid as a premier tackle, and he's not a premier right tackle or premier left tackle. They need somebody who can be an absolute shutdown guy. I mean, obviously Willie Anderson isn't walking through that door on the right side, but they need someone that they can count on that, you know, they draft and this is going to be their guy for 5-6 years and they don't have to worry about that side at all. Williams isn't that guy. He's just a guy you're comfortable with. So.
Yep. I think Bengals Nation would agree. And I think we all kind of lean towards probably not on this one, but I do think Jonah Williams is going to get a payday somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, he's shown versatility, and I think he showed that he was better on the right side than the left side, but he was passable left tackle for, 3.5 years, so it's someone, I mean, tackle play is so poor throughout the league. Somebody's going to give him, he's going to get $18, $20 million a year, and the Bengals won't nor should match that. They have too many guys right now that are average to slightly above average players that they pay a lot of money to, and I don't think they should do that here.
Yep. I think they'd be better off going through the draft and trying to get a young piece.
Yeah. T. Higgins. This is the $20 million question.
I mean, for the longest time, I thought it was impossible that they wouldn't franchise him or that he wouldn't be on the Bengals roster for at least one more year. It, to me, it's starting to feel more and more like he's going to be playing elsewhere next year. However that happens, whether that's a franchise tag in a trade or whether that's just, you know, outright he's out of here. I don't know. I just have this feeling in the pit of my stomach he's going to be playing elsewhere.
Don't see any chance at all to where they just let him go as an unrestricted free agent and recoup a third round comp pick for him. The more it's since the season ended, I was kind of 50-50. Are they going to tag and trade him, or are they going to tag him and let him play out, or even possibly, I guess, maybe 33, or tag and extend him long term? I think it's a 90% chance to where he's tagged and plays the 2024 season as a Bengal. From there, I'll say 50% chance of that 90%, 50% chance he's just on the 1 year franchise tag and then moves after this year. 40% chance to where he's tagged and then extended. Bengals won't let him hit the market right now. Like there's, I mean, Jesse Bates, we knew he was going to leave, but they still tagged him and kept him for that last year. Burrow wants him. I mean, that's kind of why Burrow structured his deal the way he is, knowing where the wide receiver was market was going anyway. They'll still be able to afford to pay him and Jamar. I mean, I think if you do something like a 3-year deal for T, his big money is going to be paid out before any of Jamar's or even a lot of Burrow's big money comes out, and you can make it work that way. Whether I would or not, I don't know. The Bengals struggle with explosiveness. T is not explosive. He is a big, strong downfield threat because he can go up over top of guys and use his physical attributes to just box out the other guy. He's a great, I mean, he's legitimately one of the 32 top wide receivers. I mean, he's a wide receiver one for 25 other teams in the league. But I don't know what the best thing to do. I don't know what the best way to build a roster. If they keep T, they'd absolutely need to find a slot wide receiver. And I like Charlie Jones. I like what he can be, but they need to get somebody who's a better, more day one step in plug and play guy to be able to work in the slot. I think Jones can be that, but he needs to spend a lot of time in the weight room. They just need more explosive from their offense. You've got a quarterback who is just the most accurate, has the best anticipation, processes faster and better than any other quarterback, but guys can't get open. He's got to throw them open outside of Chase. And if they bring back T, they need to do something else for that third wide receiver spot.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think for the Bengals offense, the time is now. I mean, we can keep talking about trying to, you know, piece this roster together and building and doing all this stuff and here and there. And it's now. I mean, Super Bowl windows don't last forever. So when you have them, you've got to be right and you've got to hit. So I agree. I think the Bengals need day one ready guys. We can't wait. Charlie Jones is a nice piece, but we can't wait on him to develop in the slot. You have to have answers right now. So I agree.
As an aside, do you think learning where this roster actually was, I mean, we thought that this was the deepest roster the Bengals had ever had, and we learned, especially on defense, that's not the case. Knowing what we know now, do you think the Bengals would have gone a different route with their draft picks instead of getting Miles Murphy, who was not a day one starter? They knew he wasn't a day one starter. Would they have gone for someone more plug and play? And especially drafting two receivers in mid-late rounds, knowing that, you know, they needed more depth.
I don't know that the Bengals would have done it differently. I really don't. I think that they like Miles Murphy. I think they like the picks they had. I think The only thing that might have changed for me is maybe Jesse Bates. I think maybe they rethink that one, or Von Bell, one of the two.
Yeah.
I think both of them together was just too much to lose and really hold that core cohesiveness. So I think that would be the one area I think they might rethink, is bringing back one of those two guys just to have some some familiarity with the Bengals secondary and defense. But as far as the draft goes, I don't know that they would have changed a whole lot.
I wonder, because I mean, it was a very Bengals draft anyway. I mean, the Bengals don't always go for the, you know, the guy who's going to be plug and play, especially at that point late in the draft. You're not getting someone who's a sure bet step in day one starter. So I don't know. It's just kind of an interesting thought project there. So moving on, Irv Smith. Yes. This is probably the easiest of the easy ones. This is easier than Tyler Boyd. Any chance Irv Smith is back as a Cincinnati Bengal in 2024?
No. I want the family feud. I want the family feud Red X. No, we don't want it. We're good.
I mean, pretty much from the jump. I mean, second week against Baltimore, just dropping passes, not being able to get his feet down on the fourth. Like, and it's easily the biggest disappointment. I mean, of any of the any of the free agents that the Bengals have brought in the past handful of years, this is easily the biggest biggest disappointment, even worse than Trey Waynes, because Trey Waynes had the excuse of being injured. Irv Smith was just unable to get open, wasn't able to either hang on to the ball or make plays after the catch, and basically, I mean, he was completely supplanted by the fourth string tight end who was on the practice squad for 2/3 of the season.
Yeah, I mean, completely agree. Yeah, Trey Waynes had the injury was real. I mean, that's a real injury. Irv Smith was, the minute the pen hit the paper, it was, I mean, we got nothing else out of it. It just didn't work out.
Yeah. Sticking with tight end room, Drew Sample, this to me seems the easiest. Yes. We absolutely found his value. Obviously, we know he blocks almost as good as most offensive linemen. Brought him in as the third down kind of pass blocking back, motion him in, and he was able to make plays after the catch. I mean, he had a couple touchdown catches and showed a little more athleticism than he showed in the last handful of years. I think you can get him on a couple-year deal. There's going to be a bunch of new guys in the tight end room, but I think him for the familiarity and comfort that Burrow, the Burrow should have with him, and he's been around since Burrow's entire career, I think he's the easiest yes on this list.
Yeah, I agree. And he's continuing to make strides. I feel like this year was his best year by far, and I'm excited. I never thought I would be on the guy that was saying I'm excited to see Drew Sample. But I'm here. I love him. I think Drew Sample has turned into a quality piece. So, yes, I hope so, and I think so, yes.
Excitement for Drew Sample. Those are words I don't think that have ever been uttered since he was drafted two rounds too soon, but it's neither here nor there. But yeah, per PFF, this was his, I guess technically second best year. 2020, he graded out a little bit better, but I think this, he proved his value. I mean, the guy is just rock steady. He's not tight end one. He's not the guy running down the seam, but just an absolute kind of block, a guy that you know you can rely on. So, next is Trenton Irwin. I said no, but then reading Paul Danner Jr. From The Athletic had a player by player, just a quick blurb about all 63 players signed to contracts, or 63 with the 10 futures. And he said Irwin's an easy yes to bring back. Where are you on him?
I think they'll probably bring him back for the familiarity and keeping the roster kind of sound. Personally, I wish they wouldn't, and it's nothing against Trenton Irwin as a player, but I'd rather see some of the young guys we have getting these snaps. I don't see that he's better than the young guys, so I don't know why we need him to take up a roster spot is kind of how I feel about it. Like the guy, like the player, but Yoshi, Charlie Jones, I'm fine with both of those guys.
Yeah, I think Charlie Jones is kind of a, I don't want to say one-for-one replacement, but he's similar sized. He's faster. He provides more value in special teams because he's an actual threat as a punt returner. Trenton Irwin, like, again, good story. Good hard-nosed player. You know what you're getting with him. Like, he fills in well. He does his job, but what has he really given you that you can't get from 20 other guys from practice squads and everything? Not really. I mean, is he that much better than Trent Taylor, the guy that they had a couple years ago on practice squad, on practice squads and on their playoff roster? I don't think so. He's got cooler hair.
Yep, I agree.
So, last two are kind of easy ones. Tanner Hudson and Jake Browning, they're both exclusive rights free agents. These two are absolute 100% yes. I think they're both going to get signed to modest extensions. Hudson's a bit older, so it's not going to be for crazy money, but I can see them keeping them both, you know, doing 2-3 year deals, front loaded. Hudson absolutely showed that he was probably, per PFF, he was the fifth most efficient, most effective tight end from when he assumed the, I don't say starting tight end role, but assumed the mantle of being the pass catching tight end on this roster. Just great hands, made plays, have surprising athleticism after the ball for someone who's 29 years old and come off several practice squads. So I think he's an absolute no-brainer, yes.
Yeah, I mean, if either one of these guys is playing elsewhere, it's because the Bengals have traded them, is the hope. I don't see any way these guys are not on the Bengals roster.
Yeah, and same thing with Jake Browning. He proved that he's a solid backup. All the talk about everyone that people had kind of gone into when they had the 3-game winning streak, when he was playing really, really well, they could possibly sign him and then trade him to someone for some good assets. That's not happening. Nobody's going to trade anything more than a late day 3 pick for a 28-year-old backup quarterback. He's so much more valuable to your team because he knows the system. He's been around for a couple of years, and now you're comfortable. You know, if Burrow has to miss any time, you're comfortable that he can kind of keep the boat afloat. I mean, 50, you know, going 500. I guess he was 4-3 as a starting quarterback or from a backup. That's good. Like, that's really good. If you need someone for a month or so.
Yeah, I think when you talk about backup quarterbacks, your goal is for them to go 500. If your backup quarterback can come in a 2-game scenario and go 1-1 or a 4-game stretch and go 2-2, that's what you're looking for. So I agree. I think Jake Browning is super valuable to the Bengals.
Yeah. Bengals have a lot more free agents than this, but these are the only ones that are really going to change the face of the franchise change the face of the roster going into next year. There are a handful of guys that I think are possibilities of being cut, and we'll go over them briefly here. Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon has a $8.8 million salary, $2.75 dead cap if they were to cut him, so that'd be almost $5.75 million savings. I would cut him. Again, he's a workhorse back. He's fine, but I think the Bengals are too tempted to use him way too much. He provides zero explosion, and he's fine, but he's not what I think the roster needs. I think they probably, I don't know. I think it's a 50-50% chance that he's around. But if I were Duke Tobin, I'd have a nicer house, but I would let him go. Say thanks for your time and good luck elsewhere.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. My guess is it'll be a mix of something in between, and they'll probably do another contract restructure, and he'll probably end up back on the Bengals, and he'll run for another 1,000 yards in 17 games, and that's probably what I see happening. So, but I agree. I think cutting him's a real possibility.
Yeah. Next two are kind of tied in together here. I've got Sam Hubbard and BJ Hill. This is what I'm talking about the last couple weeks of them overpaying, or maybe not overpaying, but investing legitimate cap space to above average guys. Sam Hubbard is a great edge defender against the run. He doesn't provide much at all pass rush. BJ Hill, I think he'd provide more value if they cut his snaps down. He's played over 70% last 2 years because they haven't been able to replace Larry Ogunjobi. Sam Hubbard is owed $22 million over the next 2 years, $4 million dead cap in 24, $2 million in 25 if he's cut. That's $16 million over 2 years. I think for a team that struggled against the run, I don't know if they're going to do that, and especially since you don't know what you have at defensive tackle. replacing DJ Reader at nose. I don't think they're going to do it, but that's a place that I would at least I think the question has to be asked.
I mean, I hate to be the one to say it, but I would definitely cut him. I mean, I $16 million in savings for what is being nice when you say an average defensive end. I mean, he has zero pass rush. Yes, good against the run, but we were horrendous against the run. So how much worse can it get? I think saving $16 million is worth it. You have Miles Murphy. You drafted in the first round. I would save the $16 million.
Yeah. BJ Hill has $10.83 million salary, a $3.3 million dead cut. So it's $7.5 million savings. I would be more liable to keep him around, but again, you need to pair him with somebody that cuts his snaps down. He cannot continue to play. His effectiveness, his effectiveness goes down. He wears down, and I mean, how many key sacks? Hell, he had two interceptions in back-to-back games. That both of them crazy athletic plays, but his money outpaces his performance, I think. And again, I think a lot of that is just because he's playing too much and he just is gassed by the end of games.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think BJ Hill, I wouldn't expect him to get cut. His money does kind of outpace what he's worth just a little bit, but the Bengals are still in the green there because for a long time, they were just getting an absolute steal with BJ Hill. And just the fact that he's on the roster with trading Billy Price to get him, I mean, that was a phenomenal trade because Billy Price, I don't even know how he got drafted, let alone in the first round. He was horrendous. So getting BJ Hill out of that, I still think he's got value. I don't see him as a cut option.
Yeah, and I don't think it's something to do. And it's not something I don't think I would do either. But again, just looking at dollars and cents, the Bengals are fine for the next couple of years for their cap. But as Burrow's contract gets bigger, and obviously the cap goes up with it as well, but you have more guys to, you know, more guys to pay. I mean, this is what happens when you nail two picks that are top of the first round. They're going to get paid. They're going to get paid a lot of money, and it's cheaper to pay them than it is to go out and get it on the free agent market. But now you have guys that are getting top of the chart money, and you got to figure out what to do around them. So last one I have, and I think this one seems like an absolute no-brainer. Nick Scott, $4.3 yes. million salary, $2 million in dead cap. It's what, $2.3 million savings if cut before 6-1. Post 6-1, it's $1 million each in 24 and 25, and it's a $3.3 million cap savings in 24. I don't think there's a chance that he throws on the stripes again for the Bengals.
No, he was horrendous. I mean, he was so bad. You thought coming over from the Rams, he had a little bit of promise, but all that promise went out the window pretty quickly. The other aspect of this is Jordan Battle has proven himself to be a very, very viable option. So Nick Scott, adios, muchachos.
Yeah. Outside of that, I mean, looking at the Bengals contracts, not really anyone else that would even fit for criteria for even being cut. Orlando Brown is, I think his contract is underwater for right now. Mike Hilton, he's still effective. I think he was too worried about playing safety because of how the safety play was behind him first half of the season, and he struggled. Second half of the season, he played loose. He played like the Mike Hilton that we're used to seeing, just come crashing hard on run blitzes and on off the edge rushing the passer. So I don't think he's going anywhere. But again, you just look at where possibly to free up money, and he is a possibility. What I've seen mentioned is the possibility that Dax Hill, and maybe after this year, because this is Hilton's last year coming up in 24, Dax Hill takes over the slot cornerback. And given his speed and his quickness and his size, for that matter, especially if he has to match up against tight ends, that would be a good fit. If the Bengals have any thought about that, I think that's the only chance that, going back to our previous Nick Scott, I think that's the only chance that Nick Scott survives is if the Bengals possibly think about moving Dax Hill to slot or even splitting time between there. But they do. They do need to upgrade the play in the secondary, whether it's by players or moving those players around to different positions.
Yeah, and I mean, if we're talking about we're going to upgrade, then Nick Scott is not the answer if Dax Hill goes to slot, in my opinion. So,
yeah.
And I know you got to have backups and you need depth, but if you have depth that doesn't get anything done, I'd let Nick Scott's out. If I'm the Bengals, I'll move on. I'll draft somebody else. I'll find another low cost, low risk, high reward free agent. Nick Scott to me did not fit with what the Bengals wanted to do, and kind of got worse throughout the season. So, even if you're going to plan on moving Dax Hill, I'd still try to find other options.
Yeah, the only thing that he was good at, he was actually pretty good coming off the edge on blitzes. He had pretty good pass rushing grade, but again, like you can get that from other guys. One possibility that I'll throw out here, I can see it happening because they can save a ton of money. I can see the Panthers cutting Von Bell. They're going to have a completely new regime in here. They can save $9 million on the cap if they cut him coming up in the offseason. And I think Bengals would absolutely welcome him back with open arms. I think he would come back to the Bengals and then have him and him battle and Dax Hill kind of cycling through there. And I think that would be a possibility again. Von Bell is still technically signed to a contract through the 2025 season, but I can see him absolutely because how awful the team was all around them just trying to purge. And you have your quarterback that you drafted this year, purge everybody else who's not 25 and under. So,
yeah, and I think the Bengals would love that. I mean, the Panthers have a bunch of money that's just not good money with, Von Bell, Adam Thielen. I know there's another one they signed that was older, but I could definitely see them kind of purging the roster because they were 2-15 and not really close to winning a third one.
Yeah. Lord, Taylor Moton's making almost $30 million cap hit for him this year. Was he that good of a tackle this year? I don't think so. Obviously, you want to keep guys in. You've got a quarterback. You drafted one overall. You want to keep guys around, but they got a lot of work. I don't envy whoever's going to end up at that job.
Yeah, agreed.
So, quick question. Where do you think Jim Harbaugh is going to go?
I think it's down to two for me. I think the Bears are a possibility just because it makes too much sense. But I think the Chargers really are the one that everybody's kind of ringing in. But I definitely, no matter what, I think the correct answer is, where's Harbaugh going to go? The NFL. He will not be back in college. I think that he's got, you've got things coming down the pipeline where you're about to get in trouble. Theoretically, he hasn't really been punished by the NCAA yet. These were all kind of like Big Ten allegations, self-discipline, Big Ten discipline. So he'll be in the NFL. He will not be in college. The other aspect of this is he won the national championship. I think that this was the perfect storm for him at Michigan. No Georgia in the playoff. Got to play a bad Alabama team, let's be honest. I think everything worked out for Michigan.
It is funny that a bad Alabama team is still better than 130 other teams out there. I don't think they were the number four team in the country, but that program is just so good that a bad year for them is sneaking in and pretty much getting gifted a spot because the playoff committee didn't want to skip over the SEC.
Yeah, I think if Georgia wins that SEC championship game, I think that they beat whenever they play Michigan, they beat them by about 100. I don't think it's close. I think Michigan found the perfect storm. Harbaugh found the perfect storm. He's never going to be able to reach these heights again. Ryan Day is going to get fired at Ohio State at some point, and Ohio State's going to continue to dominate Michigan like normal. So I think Harbaugh is going to get out right now. It's the perfect time to get out. He'll end up with an NFL job. I'm saying Chargers, Bears, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I put my money on the Chargers again. He played there played in San Diego. Now they're in LA, but close enough. I think Sharon Moore is going to take over at Michigan. Michigan's going to kind of need a bit of a reset anyway. because they're losing a lot of guys on offense, and shoot, they're going to be losing a lot of guys on both sides of the ball. Great mic drop moment for Jim Harbaugh to get out of there before any of the allegations. And it helps if they let him go. Is that a possibility? Or not to let him go, but if he leaves, does that kind of open the door for the NCAA to be a little more lenient, since the guy who was there for the infractions is no longer there? So
yeah, is there any chance Michigan gets this win vacated?
I don't think so. I think it really depends on, I mean, if the NCAA really wants to do it right, they should investigate all 130 some odd teams, all of the good ones, even my Bearcats, who weren't very good this past year, but they all do illegal shady shit. You can't not do that. Someone was interviewed, and I can't remember who it was, but said every team, at least in the Power Five schools, every team cheats or bends the rules except for Vanderbilt, and Vanderbilt sucks. So,
yeah, that's well said. I agree. I don't think Michigan should get this win vacated. I don't think it should even be on the docket. I think the NCAA needs to get off their high horse and just, I mean, we're paying these athletes millions of dollars in college. So just open it up. Let these guys play. Who cares?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. I mean, you want to make sure that every team has a level, it's somewhat of a level playing field. It's not going to happen that much. There's too much money at a handful of schools to keep it from being actual equitable, but these happen. I mean, taking the Heisman Trophy away from Reggie Bush, everyone knows Reggie Bush was the best player in college football that year. Like, that's not, is that really deterring anybody? The guy was still drafted, you know, top of the first round. I mean, this stuff happens. I mean, the games happened, and just trying to vacate them or, you know, not honor them, it's dumb. Nobody takes it serious. It's taken as serious as everyone takes UCF's national title from 2017 or whatever the hell that is. We lost. Oh, hang on.
Nope, we're back.
That was weird. Usually it's my job for to have technical issues during the middle. So that pretty much wraps up all we have for this week. Next week, we'll have quick thoughts on playoff games, what happened this past weekend, and what we think is going to happen the next weekend. But next week's episode will be a real fun one. I'm not going to give too many details, but you guys do absolutely want to check it out. Elsewhere on the Riverfront Network, Late Night Reds returned on Sunday after a two-week hiatus for the holidays. Obviously, everyone knows the Riverfront Red Show is going to be on Friday mornings, as usual, with Nate, Chad, Bill. I don't even know who's on there anymore. NBA Fridays on Friday with Tim. And Riverfront U, Ryan had a great interview with UC women's basketball coach Katrina Merriweather. That was dropped last week. Her thoughts on kind of navigating their first year through, I mean, everyone talks about the UC men's college basketball with the Big 12, but I mean, women's college basketball, Big 12 is an absolute powerhouse as well. I mean, Baylor and those other teams. So, and this is a team that's trying to rebuild from a lot further depths than what the men's basketball team is. So it's a really good interview. Recommend everybody listening to it. Greg, final words before we get out of here.
Trey Hendrickson, personal best, 17 and a half sacks. Good for him. Great season.
Yeah, I did forget to mention that. It was interesting that he sat out. He was out before halftime. That might have only been like the first quarter. The NFL lead was within reach. He only had a sack and a half to tie TJ Watt, and he sat down. So that tells you what, you know, what he thought was important. Just, you know, get other guys a break and let it rest. So outside of that, everyone, should be a good weekend slate of the playoffs, and we'll talk to you all next weekend or next week.